personality that you find out maybe it's creativity or confidence or a certain vibe you get from her, and show her how that really affects you. You're not
well,
going to be.
Do you ever make it a point where just you just say, you know, hey, there's you know, you tell really funny jokes, so I'm sexually attracted to you. Do you ever like actually come out and say it?
You tell funny jokes, so I want to fuck you.
let me understand what you're saying. You're saying, do you?
Because what I'm trying to figure out is what you're talking about, how you're saying how you escalate, because you're saying after it's believable, when it's believable,
yeah.
That's the time to make your case, state your case. What I'm trying to figure out is you're also saying, find something unique about this woman and, make your case, state your case about that. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, how do you actually broach that point?
Okay, good question. Well, I'm going to answer that question, but in a very roundabout way, okay? So bear with me a little bit. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to take you on a little bit of an exercise, a mind exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, imagine you're sitting around with some of your friends at night drinking, having fun, people you know really well. And I say to you, look, a little voice in your head is me. I say, okay, your job here is now to convince all your friends that UFOs, little flying saucers, come down and they take people away periodically, and then they replace them with replicants, okay? So I want you to convince them that UFOs and space aliens exist and visit this planet. Now, imagine trying to do that. Would that be an easy task to convince your friends that is true?
It depends on your friends, right?
It does. It does depend on your friends, okay? But I would say that's a pretty hard proposition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, compare that to a different task. Say the task was to convince your friends that you believe UFOs exist.
Mm-hmm.
Is that easier or harder?
I think it'd be easier.
Okay, it is easier, exactly. It's the same thing with the SOI, with showing your sexual intention. Your job is never to convince a woman that she is sexy. If you tell a woman you are sexy, she'll say, no, I'm not. She just won't believe you, right? Or she'll say, she'll laugh, whatever. The problem is you've made a mistake, because that's not your job. Your job is to convince her that she's sexy in a sort of God perspective sort of way. Your job is to convince her that she affects you in a sexual way, you specifically, right? When I say be unique, that's part of being unique, is how it affects you specifically. You want to have the interaction you're having with her as if the only interaction you could, you want her to feel as if you could only have the interaction with the two of you. No other two people are having that anywhere else on this planet. And I think that you do that by showing how her sexuality or her creativity or anything affects you personally in a very unique way, right? It's just like I said earlier, it's about showing greed. It's showing what you get out of it. It actually makes people feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that sound? Well, in the case, let's say a girl had a good sense of humor, I'd say to her, hey, you make me laugh. You have a good sense of humor. I find that really a turn on. And then I might add a little joke on the end of that and say, but don't get a big head, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make
don't think what?
I'm trying to make it fun, but at the same time, I'm trying to show that there's something unique about her, some sort of characteristic that I find sexually attractive.
Right.
Neil has something to say here.
I was just going
to
clarify, and then we got to do a speed round of questions. What I think it's a great point, I wanted to make sure you were kind of getting to that, is you're not letting her know in a way that makes her uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You're not letting her know in a way that requires a response.
Yes, I think that's really key. I think you and I can totally agree on that. I'm not really requiring her to respond to that, because she will know how to respond to that. What I am looking for a response, but I'm looking for the sub-communication.
Right. Does she
I'm not
enjoy,
looking for the actual...
Is she enjoying the statement and laughing at it, or is she, you know...
Is she enjoying it? Is she obviously kind of moving towards you, or is she, like, standing up and walking away?
Right.
You know, you're trying to read her body language and where it goes from there. So I'm always trying to push the envelope, and I'm trying to show sexual interest whenever possible, but I'm not doing it in a way to ask for a response, because that would just be a question, and I don't want to make it a question. I want to make it a statement. It basically is an I statement about you, not about her. Ironically enough, it's about you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can only be in your own head anyway.
Right. I mean, that's funny, because
right.
I never thought about, because I don't think about myself doing the SOIs, but I think I do it a lot. Like, if she does something very vulnerable, it kind of shows her vulnerable side.
Yeah.
I will say something like, oh, my God, that's the most adorable fucking thing I've ever seen. And then I'll sort of push her away a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, just because it is so adorable, I just fucking don't want to be around it anymore because it's adorable. Or,
yeah.
Or I know your kind of style to say more. you know, that set of I statement, like I sort of.
Yeah, well, I think it's a, I think it's the same thing. I think it would be stronger though if you put it in I statement form.
I know you like I, you love I statement form. I remember one night we were out in San Francisco, and I was saying like, oh, you know, I was saying something like, oh, I like that. I was saying I like a, that you're like this to a girl.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh no, it's better to say I like people who are like this.
Yeah, because I think it's more it's more about you specifically. I think. You know, so I don't. Does that answer your question, or does this confuse you?
Yeah, no, it's getting there because it seems like what you're saying is like, you know, give them that compliment, and then you're gonna have to use a little push pull too.
I think that works really effectively. I also sort of disqualify myself sometimes.
The reason
after
why you disqualify and do that afterwards is not because it's not just because push pull, and also because it prevents her from feeling uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Neil and I are on the same page.
Hey,
all
so
right.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're over time. I know there's how many questions are in the call, Stephanie.
Yes, next we have Wandering Soldier. Your line is open.
Hold on. How many questions are in the queue?
Oh, excuse me. We do have approximately another 13 questions.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do because we're low on time. We're going to do a speed round, which is we'll try this for the first speed round. Each question, Juggler and I will have a one-sentence answer to. Once we hit a period, we have to stop even if we're not there yet. Okay, so first question, we'll try it. I want to try and get to as many people as possible.
Stephanie, we're just going to go through these one after the other. So
very quickly.
If you could just shift through them really quickly, I think it would be good.
Not even a greeting. Go ahead. Just once she calls your name, just ask your question.
Wandering Soldier?
Hello?
Go with your question, Wandering Soldier.
Lead with your question.
All right. My question is basically this. I have a social gathering coming up, but it's from people I already know. And since I already know them, this is more about social proof. How would I basically demonstrate the change that I've gone through to basically eliminate the old me, the old AFC me?
My one sentence answer is not to try to prove anything. You're the center of attention. Don't worry about proving anything. All you have to do is select the person you want to be with and then let them see you being sort of popular and enjoyed, but don't let them feel bypassed or completely ignored, because I have these social gatherings all the time. So don't worry about that. Either you're the new you or you're not the new you. There's nothing to prove.
I think that was more than one sentence. You're in violation.
No. That was two sentences. God damn it.
Two sentences.
No, that's fine.
Okay. I think that you make I statements and ask you questions, big open-ended you questions. All right, next caller.
Thank you. I didn't think two sentences, you didn't one. So mine was a statement and an afterthought. Okay, next question.
Next, Sate, your line is open.
Mine was a run-on sentence.
Juggler, earlier you were talking about people not really believing in altruism. And I was just wondering, if I'm in that state going out and I say something that's just genuinely, I see something I like, I want to give somebody a compliment, whether it's a guy or a girl, is there a way to calibrate that to follow it up with something so that they will accept it and realize I'm not trying to get anything from them?
Yeah, good question. I'm going to violate the rule as well.
No.
I think, I just want to be clear on it. I don't believe that you should not be altruistic. I believe you should be altruistic. However, I don't want you to come across as if you're being altruistic. So I believe in being good for goodness sake, but I think even when you're being good for goodness sake, I think you got to cloak it in for people to take it. You have to cloak it in greediness. So I say, a lot of times I'll say to somebody, hey, I like this about you. I like your creativity, right? And they'll say, thank you. And I say, well, you know, don't get a big head about it. I just like being, I'm just going to suck all your creativity and leave you in a dried out, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm just going to take out all your creativity and leave you generic. I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm just trying to say, like, I wait till somebody says thank you as if they take it as a compliment, and I say, well, I'm just trying to get this from you, right? So I'll buy somebody, let's say I buy somebody dinner, right? I'm not saying seduction, but let's say I buy somebody dinner, and they say, thanks for dinner. I say, hey, don't worry about it. I'm just trying to make my conscience feel good. I don't even like you. And then, ironically, they take that as, they really like that, and they actually like that.
I think that's great, acknowledging the situation. Another way to do it is if you're altruistic, you want to walk up to someone, make a compliment, and walk away afterward. Next question.
Yeah, that kind of shows you. Yeah, I like that too. It doesn't show you're trying to get anything from it. Okay, next question, Stephanie.
Next we have Zach. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. My question is about making the most when interacting with hired guns. So the obvious is that time is of the essence. And, of course, your approach needs to be unique because they get hit on excessively. I'd just like to learn some of the techniques that have worked for you in this setting.
I didn't quite get the question.
I got it. Hired guns, what
were
hired guns?
Okay.
So, first of all, Bravo has a lot of stuff on hired guns, and I think it's in the Style Life Underground and stuff. So go into the news groups, into the Style Life Elite Forum, and ask for Bravo stuff. It goes in detail. My quick thought is this. Time is not of the essence with a hired gun. Why is time not of the essence? Because they're not fucking going anywhere. You can do it today. You can do it next Saturday. You can do it Saturday afterward. They're fucking stationary and immobile. So the secret is to change that in your head and realize that time is not of the essence. You can just walk by and give them a little piece of your personality each time.
Yeah, I like that. Not rushing it. Just being fun. I think is key. But also, I ironically, this is going to sound different than what Neil said, but it is the same. Time is of the essence in some ways, in that you can't, like, if she's a waitress, whatever, you can't expect to have a 5-minute conversation necessarily. So understand her time constraints and kind of work within them. It's like if I see a hot girl carrying drinks, right, and I stop her and I start talking with her, eventually her arms are going to get tired and she's got to set those drinks down. So it's much better at that point if I say, hey, I like you, I want to talk to you. You say, well, I'm going to walk with you and help you drop off these drinks, if that makes sense. So sort of acknowledging what her constraints are.
That was so many sentences. But thanks for the call, and read Zan's cocky, funny waitress technique in the book The Game. Neil Strauss, HarperCollins, ISBN number 743-43213. Next question.
Next we have Baldrovic, your line is open.
Hey, Baldrovic.
Hey, guys.
I know, Baldrovic, what's happening?
I know. Recently I've been finding that verbal dexterity and conversation skills are simply not enough firepower to consistently attract beautiful women in high-octane environments. So my question is, how is it possible to consistently get into a rapport state with high-quality women without first making them attracted to you? In other words, at what point is excellent conversation skill and being interesting useless because a woman is not first deemed you worthy of her attention?
Okay, I'm going to take this one first. I'm not sure if I completely understand the question, but I would say use social proof at that point. I would talk to you want to make sure her peer group really likes you. That's really key. And you can use the same techniques that I've described on her peers, and they'll like you, and then you can move forward.
My answer is the same as Jugglers, which is that Jackie, the girl, is with me, and her friends, they always go out to the big clubs, opera, and stuff like that. And my answer simply, that was and I connected the sentences. my answer is simply that do the work before the approach. In other words, before the approach, she should want to meet you and be in rapport with you because she's seen you being the center of attention. She's seen people come up to you. She's seen the girls you've been with. So, Jackie says she never talks to a guy in a club who doesn't want to talk to you before meeting him.
Yeah, and just remember that women are attracted. One of the biggest things women are attracted to is guys who have social skills, guys who are social. That itself is a very attractive quality.
All right, thanks, Bolshevik. Good question, and I know what you're like, and I know your game is very good. I know you're kind of looking to step it up to even the next level, and the next level is before she approaches you, before you approach her already want to be in rapport with you. Good question.
Cool, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Next, we have DeWizit. Your line is open.
Okay. Right, thanks. And we're really running short on time, so I'm going to say half a sentence, but Juggler will complete the second half of the sentence. Go ahead, DeWizit.
It's DeWizit. Hey, what's up?
What's happening, man? Okay.
Hey. Okay. Really short question. How do you balance improving my social skills with being in an exclusive relationship?
By not stopping socializing when you're in the relationship. All socializing doesn't have to be sexually motivated.
And I would say you're definitely asking the right person because I recently am a married man. Some people may know that.
Exactly. As soon as I heard that, I was like, awesome. I want to ask.
By the way, congratulations to that.
Thank you.
I think you go out and you sarge as a couple. And, you know, that could be if you're in the threesomes, go ahead and do that. That's great. But my wife and I go out, and when we socialize, we try to sarge as a couple. And not just we want to sleep with people, but it's to make friends, right? I think you can use a lot of the same techniques, just making friends, like, if you're a couple, find other cool couples. I don't think it really ends with just trying to get girls into bed. I think there are other goals as well that you can use these things for.
Right. Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Next question.
Next, we have Streetwise King. Your line is open.
Hey, man, what's up? My question is, I've been using SOIs lately, and it just seems that sexy isn't cutting it anymore. So what would you guys recommend would be a better one?
That was really quick. Sexy isn't cutting it anymore? What?
It just doesn't seem to work. Like I was.
Wait,
just,
hold on. Start all over.
Yeah,
all
we
right.
just
I said, while I've been using SOIs lately, I've been noticing that just sexy isn't working. Like I'll say it, and they'll just say, "Oh, like it's a compliment and accept it," and it does absolutely nothing. So, what would be a better idea of an SOI?
Okay, I'm really wondering what sort of SOIs you're using, and what's the purpose of your SOIs? Okay, your purpose of your SOIs is to divide. the women that you meet in two categories, the category that they may possibly sleep with you or they will never sleep with you. So I try to find the conditions. I try to sort of find out the logistics, right, and then I hit them with an SOI. I liken this to the Ron Log theory. I have a theory called the Ron Log theory. So, and how that goes is, if you can imagine, you're walking in a forest, and as you're walking through the forest, you come across a log. It's about 6 foot long. It's kind of rotten. It's got the moss growing on it, and you pick it up, and it's really light because that's how rotten logs are. They get soft, right? Now imagine walking up to a girl and hitting her in the head, the side of the head, with your log. Okay, what happens? Well, the log busts in two because it's not really hard because it's soft and half rotted. And it doesn't kill her, it doesn't hurt her, but what does it do? It gets her fucking attention, right? A good OSY should get her attention. It should be very clear that you find her sexually interesting and attractive. It's not like, hey, I like you, I want to hang out with you. That's not really an SOI. An SOI is a statement of intention, right? Sexual intention. So I guess my biggest question is, are you really making it sexual? And if you are and it's still not working, then there's probably some logistical issues that you need to clear up in order for her to really jump on that. So depending on what the situation is, and I don't have time to go into every situation, but you've got to find out some logistical information. Also, read Warren Buffett, great stock investor. Read how he invests, and I think that'll give you a lot of insight into SOIs. You know, he follows a few stocks, and then when he sees the right conditions, he bets heavy. You've got to do the same thing. You've got to find the right conditions, and when it's right, you've got to bet heavy. And I don't know if Neil has.
Sorry about this, but go
ahead. That was so many sentences that I'm going to just – I stand by what Chuck was saying.
I jumped on some of your sentences.
Okay,
sorry.
Cool. Next one, super speed round. Okay, next one. Next call.
Next, we have Miguel. Your line is open.
Good exercise for us, to be brief.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Miguel.
Juggler, I was wondering if you had any good improv exercises, like before you would go out to, like, Sarge, like with your buddies or something.
I don't really like improv. Take acting classes.
Take acting classes. All right.
I'm sorry, I just have to be one sentence. Go ahead.
Great improv exercise that Juggler and I were talking about, I think, before the call, is to go out with your friends and say, challenge someone to come up with an opener based on what you say. Say, I want you to come up with an opener that mentions a pen and a notepad. I want you to come up with an opener about Western movies.
Yeah, and then go do it.
And then go do it. So great. So fuck improv beforehand. Do improv in the field, and then you're approaching, and it's fun, and it's curious, and she's actually going to have fun when you do that. So great question. Thanks.
Thank you.
I like that. It gets guys out of their heads a lot because they realize they don't have to do it perfect because they don't feel like, hey, you don't have to do it perfect. You gave me something really hard, so I'm expected to go fuck it up.
Right.
So it makes it easier.
And they're having fun. The girl's going to pick up on that if they're not too nervous.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Next, we have Mr. S. Your line is open.
Hey, Mr. S.
Hey. Hi, Juggler. I wanted to ask you real quick, theory or what's your take on approaching a group? Because I read some of your stuff, and you talk a lot about, like, approaching, like, a set or a single woman. But, you know, last night I was out, and it was really hard to find just, like, one person because they were all in groups. And I was wondering, what tips do you have for something like that?
Well, I would say of all people, you probably asked the right person. I consider myself an expert on groups. I feel most comfortable in groups. I spent a great deal of my professional life working as a street performer. I had to woo groups. The best advice I can give you is take my conversation camp. We go over that. The second advice would be make I statements to the whole group and you questions the one person specifically. And here's Neil.
Well, that was a good answer, and that's everyone knows how I feel about groups.
I think groups are really key and important, and I think I don't go too much into them in a lot of the stuff I've written. I definitely get more into it when I teach in person, the seminars and so forth. I mean, I love groups, and I think I have a lot of things to say about it. For some reason, I just neglected the group.
I'm better in groups than one-on-one.
I agree, so am I.
Cool, because I can play off everybody. It's fun.
Right.
Great question.
You
next question.
There's more security in groups because if something doesn't go well, you can turn to somebody else. There's a lot of stuff you can do.
I love groups. Cool. Next question. Thanks.
Next question comes from Rocky. Your line is open.
Hey, Rocky. How's it going, guys? I was, my question is, how do you avoid reverting back to those AFC ways, especially when you're around, like, really, really hot women? That's one. That's one of my problems. I just want to revert back into like kind of like supplicating a little bit.
For instance, Rocky's question is: how do you avoid referring to AFC questions? AFC questions. Sorry, AFC behavior. That was a Freudian slip.
I'm sorry. I have to revert going, you know, to AFC behavior. Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something, dude. It's a challenge we all face, especially when we're around really beautiful women or emotions are involved. And talking about Jackie, who is sitting here, who I've been dating. Like, there were just so many fucking times where I wanted to AFC out, and I'm, like, sitting there. I will ask myself, like, the dumb questions, and I'll try to answer them as myself because my emotions just are going to fuck with me and make me do the AFC shit because I'm so scared to lose her because I value her so fucking highly that it's, like, I just want to revert to complete AFC behavior, and all you have to do is fucking, like, just, I know, I don't want to say, like, what would style do, but just think, you know, in my head, I'm literally trying to come to myself for advice. So just fucking you know what the answer is going to be. So ask yourself the question and just think, what would Style do, or what would Juggler answer? How would someone else answer you? Because you just got to keep yourself in check, or ask fucking friends. Just don't, you know, you just got to sort of not give in to those behaviors and follow the system, because the system works. Just because someone is hot or famous or has a lot of social proof, that's what this game was built for. So that's the time to use the rules, not to use the rules. And that was so many sentences. It's ridiculous.
Well, and I'm feeling a little nervous or overwhelmed by someone or a situation. I usually disqualify. I usually kind of tease myself, and that reminds myself that I don't have to prove my value to the other person. Okay, next call.
Our final question comes from Montezato. Your line is open.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, man.
First of all, congratulations, Juggler, on your marriage. That's very cool, bro. Now, my question is on regards to some issues I had with struggling to get, like, integrated into a group, whether it's a group I approach or a group I've been introduced to, you know, a group of people. It happened to me a couple of days ago that I was with my girlfriend, and she wanted to, you know, she took me to a dinner where she introduced me to some of her friends, and I found it, like, really hard trying to get integrated into the group. You know, I'm a very social person and talkative person, but when I'm in those kind of situations, I just feel like I'm struggling, and that's the problem, and, you know, I shouldn't be struggling. I find it hard to actually get out of myself and, you know, start doing my usual stuff because, you know, I get along real fast and real easy with people. You know, it kind of reminded me to a story that Juggler once told about you two guys going to dinner with Ross Jeffries, and Juggler had a nosebleed, but still, you know, he couldn't even talk, and he was the one dominating the conversation.
Well,
you know, I kind of feel like in that situation, so I wanted to take this opportunity and ask you about that.
I got a fun exercise for you. Restate your question in 10 words.
Okay, how do I not struggle with getting integrated into a group?
I think that was less than 10.
Great.
I think everybody struggles with groups of people, especially if you don't really have things in common with them. The best advice I can say is be an interesting person and require the other people to be interesting. And if you learn those skills, then everything will sort of fall into place, and they'll love you and carry you on their shoulders, and your girl will love you because they love you. And it comes down to me, it's the basics. It's make I statements and ask you questions, and require that other people work, and really put yourself across. You know, a lot of times your tendency in a group that you don't know is to try to gain rapport with them, but don't do that. Talk as if you're the main character movie of your life, and let them try to make rapport with you. Let them feel what you're feeling and saying, and let them say, hey, I feel that too. So basically putting more of yourself out there instead of less. And in the end, not really caring if they like you or not. I think that's a big part of it. In the end, it's more important to be respected than to have even rapport with them. So, but good luck. I mean, I've been in the same situation.
Let me ask you a question about the I thing, because that's something I really don't do a lot, and
mm-hmm.
It's curious, I'm just interested. So let's say I'm doing a text right now, let's say, for example,
yeah.
And I want to say, last night was so incredible, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? So what would be the I version of that? I thought last night, what would be the
Yeah,
I
last night was so incredible for me.
Just for me, and that changes it.
Yeah, it just changes it, because it changes, for one, people, you want to capture someone's imagination, and part of capturing their imagination is like being like a movie where people can envision what's going on and what's happening. And without a main character, it's really hard for them to do that. And it's hard for you to do that. Like a lot of guys
I had such an amazing time last night.
Yeah, it's so much better, because if you were just to say that last night was amazing,
right.
You're basically saying, I am God floating in a cloud making a judgment. And a lot of guys get in trouble when they try to pass their opinions off as reality. You don't want to do that. You want to say, this is my reality, and allow the other person to have their own reality. Mm-hmm. My thing is I want them making commitments to the interaction. And the more I can let them voice their own reality, the more commitments they make. And a lot of guys have a hard time coming up with things to say. It's not a problem for me because I know myself really well, and I allow myself to be a character. I allow myself to express myself. And that doesn't mean I want to bore people and talk about the facts of my life necessarily, but I want to talk about how things relate to me. It gives them a feeling of connection to an honest human being. It makes them more personal, and I think it encourages the other person to do the same thing. So,
as an experiment, I'm ashamed to add such an amazing time with you last night, by the way.
Sure.
Is that
my
statement now?
Yeah, it's getting there.
I understand it. I understand the difference. I'm just not sure if I see the power of the difference. But I guess we'll have a discussion
over. Well, it's the power of the difference is if you go to a movie, let's say, and you're expecting to be entertained, make a connection to a main character, and someone comes on screen and points at you and says it's about you, then there's nothing for you to connect with. So it's a matter of just putting yourself out there and allowing someone to connect to you as much as possible. And a lot of it is the subtext. Like, a lot of people use you. They use the word you when they really should say I. Like, I say, what's it like living in Los Angeles? They say, well, it's a place that you can go skiing in the morning and you can go surfing at night, and there's a lot of people around, a lot of unique people you can meet. That doesn't really tell me anything about the person. If someone said that, I'm not making any emotional connection to that person. But if somebody said, hey, well, I like it because I can go skiing in the morning, which I'm still struggling to learn how to ski, and I can go surfing at night, and I like the juxtaposition of difference because of the way it affects my body. Well, suddenly the person says, wow, I can make an emotional connection to this person. You become alive as a character. It's just like is having a strong perspective in writing, of course. You know this. In writing, it's good to have a strong character, a strong perspective. I always advise people to go to YouTube and look up comedians, and you'll see a lot of different comedians doing their sets. And the difference you'll find, one of the differences you'll find between a professional comedian and an amateur comedian is an amateur comedian, often people don't know how he feels about his material. They don't know where he's coming from. But a professional comedian, often, if you watch him, you know exactly where he's coming from. I could probably give you a comedian a name right now, maybe Sam Kinison or Andrew Dice Clay, and you could tell me exactly how they feel about almost anything. And that's when you become a real presence and a real character, and people choose to connect with you.
Because I leave the eye out of my work when I write a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I try and avoid the eye a little bit too much, a little.
I think you're, because you're writing, typically you're writing, you know, biographies for other people. I think it's sort of, you're writing
about myself. But
at the same time, well, it's a little different in writing because you're writing for a character. So in a sense, you're writing for the character's perspective typically. And so I think it does make a difference. Sort of the eye perspective in conversation is almost like the God perspective in writing. So it's a little bit different.
All right, cool. We'll discuss this tomorrow for lunch. All right.
We can discuss.
How many questions left in the queue? I guess maybe we might not get it to them all because I just hogged up a question. Go ahead. What's next?
At this time, there are no additional questions.
All right, we did it. We paused them off. So that mine was the last question. All right, guys. So first of all, I would like to thank you all for being here and listening to the call. And those of you who listen to the recording, you got to get on these calls. You can ask your questions because this no additional question could have been your question, man. and lastly, I want to thank Juggler for being here. Juggler, please mention your website and where people can sort of find you after this.
They can go to charismaarts.com. You can also check Wayne Elise. .com. I recently started a blog.
Cool.
And I'm trying to blog, you know, once a week or so, maybe even more
right now.
It's not, you know, the blog, the Wayne Elise blog, it's not just going to be about seduction. It's going to be all about interpersonal kind of stuff. And there's a few blogs on there now, but so yeah, I'd love for you guys to check it out and kind of learn more of the where I'm coming from.
Cool. Wayne is a never-ending enigma.
Thank you. That's the highest compliment you've ever given me, Neil. And thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It was fun, man. And I'm really, you know, obviously you're one of the main guys in the game who everybody's curious about and wants to read more of and enjoy and learn from after the book you. And so it's cool for you to do this call for the boys. Guys, thank you for being here. Lots of cool shit coming up, man. Like, seriously, we've got, like, some awesome things. Don't forget... I got these crazy videos I'm making that I'm going to send out to you guys that are just cool things to watch that demonstrate some of the stuff in the field in a very counterintuitive way. Rules of the Game, the book, comes out December 18th. Fucking, yeah, I'm excited about that. What else is coming up? We got a really cool, exciting next teleconference planned. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but the extra credit missions are now in the system. So if you're doing your missions, there's no longer a block after you complete your two for the day. There's a kind of never-ending cycle of extra credit missions. So if you're feeling ambitious, you're not cut off after two missions. We're kind of doing 2.0 of a lot of the missions, and we're announcing lots of new programs. And the fun is just not stopping. Literally every single coach who's part of this is kind of busy. Almost 24/7 on getting new projects for sort of a version 2.0 of all this stuff for the new year. So anyway, I hope you guys are enjoying it. Hope you guys enjoyed the call. Don't forget to use the forms. If you're not in the forms, it's one of my favorite parts of Style Life. And thank you all for being here. Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Diego. Thank you, Juggler.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, on the Flash Chat. All 19 guys, it was awesome having you guys on chat at the same time.
All right, guys. See you next time.
This officially ends today's conference. Have a great day.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
This is a Bit Seduce exclusive, the ultimate tracker for seduction and self-improvement, the number one resource for pickup artists.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
Welcome to your Style Life Academy teleseminar hosted by StyleLife.com. Your host today will be the man who earned the title of number one pickup artist 3 years running, Neil Strauss, a.k.a. Style, the author of The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists. By speaking on this call, you are agreeing to release all rights and grant permission to StyleLife.com to use this recorded conference call in whole or in part for any purpose with no further compensation due. Without further ado, I would like to introduce your Style Life Academy founder and headmaster, Neil Strauss, known to many of you simply as Style.
Hey, guys. So just so you know, you're talking to two guys who were out way too late on Saturday, but we're going to rally some of our best stuff for you today because I'm incredibly excited. One of my favorite people I met while researching The Game, someone whose posts I think I remember really, really admiring. I brought you into Mysteries Lounge, didn't I? Didn't I email you about that?
Mm-hmm.
I brought him into Mysteries Lounge, the historical moments when pickup artists all got along and shared their best material and came up with much, much better stuff. I sort of see those as the golden years way back in the 60s or whatever that was, or maybe 4 years ago. I don't know, 3 years ago. And there he just continued to excel himself with great posts, funny posts, staying out of and above the fray. And finally, I think it was at a Cliff Lists thing in Montreal, I finally got to meet this gentleman, and we got along 10 times better in real life, and I found him to be an incredibly great guy to hang out with. And then we continued to see each other whenever he was in L.A., when I was in Canada. And when The Game came out, this gentleman actually came down to New York with a girl he was dating at the time. And in those kind of scary first weeks when, you know, my first book that I ever did all by myself without a rock star or a porn star or a celebrity to sell it, he when I went all the press, there was no press right when it came out at all whatsoever due to national catastrophes. He was there as a friend and as a person who's in the book and writes one of my favorite sections. And I learned something important about him, which is you can always tell someone's personality when they get drunk. And when Zan gets drunk, he turns into... Ooh, I just gave away who it was, but you guys know who it is. He turns into one of the... He becomes even nicer. And so this guy, to me, is someone with a great, great heart. He's like myself. He was also one of the last people ever to sort of set up shop. I always thought that he was going to do one of many other things, though he contributes something that I think no one else does to this whole scene. Ladies and gentlemen, mostly gentlemen, let me introduce you to Zan.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Zan. So So, and I haven't caught up with Zan for a while, so this is a chance for me
right.
to catch up with Zan as well. But let's start with kind of the prehistory, because I've never even asked you some of these questions. But how did you first stumble across what was known as the seduction community?
Well, I've been involved in it for a long time. I have had no other really abiding interest in my life except for the dynamics of men and women and social interactions. And so I've always been a guy that's been interested in this and been talking to people from all walks of life and talking to women, asking questions of women, studying, you know, what their answers are for years and years before there was any such thing as the community. And then it naturally migrated to the internet when it started to get, you know, in the, like you said, back in the 60s. And so the dialogue just kind of shifted from a real life dialogue to an online dialogue. And I was in there in the early days, like you said, when there was a bunch of us just sharing ideas.
Yeah.
It was before anybody really was commercial.
Right.
And we were just sharing ideas because we were all guys interested in the same thing, which is this, you know, social dynamics.
And something I found sort of interesting is that you were one of the few guys who actually seemed to be there asking for advice. Mostly, I think, as I said in the game, mostly you were sort of sharing your own kind of take and outlook on things. I remember there were really, when I was trying to choose something representative for the book, there really were a number of great posts that I had to choose from. In fact, maybe I'll even turn on my computer and read a little bit of another classic one. And so the question kind of I have is, even though you're always curious, were you always sort of naturally good with women?
Well, let me, you know, the thing is, the thing that you teach is the thing you're trying to learn. And I have been trying to understand this myself for years and years and years, and so this whole concept of me being good, I mean, in high school and after high school, I was not good. I was spectacularly not good, and that's what set me on my journey, I suppose, to try and understand it better and try and understand women better. And I spent a lot of time asking women questions. For instance, if a woman would go out with me, I would ask why. You know, what was it, you know, that interested you on that level? And by the same token, if she didn't go out with me or in some way didn't want to pursue anything with me, then I would ask her as well, which is a novel thing to do because usually a guy will get rejected from a woman and they'll wander off into their life. But I would ask, you know, for my own education, I'm very curious.
Right.
You know, why not? I just want to know. And women would be surprised by the question, and they would thoughtfully answer it because they don't know themselves sometimes. They say, well, let me understand this. So I've just been a student of this for a long time and not good in the beginning and just been trying to – and it's a journey, and we're all on the same journey, and some of us have just been thinking about it longer than others. That's all.
And I know you, one of the things you like to say is how women created me, women created you. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that, you know, as I travel to different cities in the world, I talk to women all the time. And the thing that I hear the most from them is, where are the real men? It's like they're saying, where are the men who don't apologize for being men, but who are not, you know, arrogant and presumptuous cavemen, but are just stand up and, you know, they know who they are.
Right.
So women have created, you know, essentially guys like me because they're lacking that in their life. And so anyone who steps up into that void in any way at all and isn't just the normal guy, he's embraced automatically.
And when you say apologize for being men, or describe a little bit somebody who apologizes for being a man and somebody who doesn't apologize for being a man.
Here's a perfect example. A guy will go up to a girl and start talking to her and, you know, what's your name and where are you from and the usual. And at some point he'll say something along the line of, would you like to go for coffee with me sometime? And then the girl will say back to him, you know, it's very kind of you to ask. You know, thank you for asking, but I can't. I have a boyfriend. The guy will immediately reply, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had a boyfriend. I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't realize, blah, blah, blah. In other words, he apologizes for asking her out. He apologizes for not knowing she had a boyfriend. And what are we apologizing for? That's the thing. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about is we will apologize for being men, for being sexual creatures, for being, like I said, for asking a girl out. And they don't want that.
Right.
You know.
And there's a line that you have or that you use where just to give an example of the right way to do it, Zan, there's this line, you know, you say, come out with me for a drink tonight, I'll pick you up at 7. She says, I can't, my boyfriend wouldn't like it. And your response is, oh, hey, I understand. Let's make it 8 then.
That's right, exactly. So
that would be the opposite.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, the problem is we become phased. A girl says, oh, I have a boyfriend, and we become phased. And I don't mean that you need to railroad through that. Like, she might be engaged, whatever. You don't push through that and say, well, you know, I'm better than him. It's not like that. It's like we become phased because we discover that this pretty girl we're talking to has a boyfriend, and we're surprised. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I thought maybe, you know, I just thought we'd get a coffee. I just thought we'd be friends, et cetera.
Right.
But we can't be phased because a pretty girl's always got a boyfriend of some kind. And so the true answer is to just respectfully continue the conversation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like I'm going to read the rest of that little exchange that I just gave you.
Yeah.
So I think it's very funny and kind of shows a little bit of your persona. Do you mind?
No, of course.
Great. So this is from one of the Zan's posts that I was actually going to use in the game. I just thought it was so funny when he walks up to the girl, says, I'll pick you up at 7. She says, I can't. My boyfriend wouldn't like it. He says, I understand. Let's make it 8 then. That's not the end of it. It's not just making that joke. I'm going to go on just to quote the rest of this post that was from Mystery's Lounge back in the 60s. I never, ever worry about a woman's resistance to me. If she says she is not interested in leaves, no problem. If I ever see her again, I immediately go up to her, smile and wink, and pick up right where I left off, as if she never had resisted me in the first place. In other words, her boyfriend objections or any other objections mean nothing to me. So Zan returning, big smile. Hello, sweetie, did you miss me? Her, hardly. Zan, I want to see you. Tell me your number and I'll remember it. Her, no, I told you last time I have a boyfriend. Zan, oh, so you're still seeing Norman? His name's not Norman. Smile, wink. Really, that's very interesting. I have 2 bottles of champagne at home. No thanks. One to drink and one to pour all over your body. You never give up, do you? Of course not. Wouldn't be the same if I did, would it? Her laughing. No, I suppose not. I never try to defend myself or protect myself from getting a bad name, he goes on to say. I never apologize for being a womanizer. Why? Because reputation is a major attraction to women. It's true. And it is true. I think that's one of the hardest things to get in your head. For me, even to this day, is that... you know, what women say isn't what they want. They'll give you a lot of shit for being a certain way, and that way is something they're attracted to. And they really want to hammer you into being a certain type of guy, and I was that type of guy, and it's so hard to know that I have to trust what worked for me and trust my instincts and trust what I learned in the community and not trust this sort of moral voice consensus that is, you know, constantly telling you to not do these things and act and be a certain way that is completely unexciting, you know, and harmless and boring and not attractive.
Exactly right. And, you know, that whole concept of, if you think of it, what kind of men are not fazed by a response from a girl? It's a man who has options and who knows who he is. they're not phased. In other words, a good example as well is we telegraph our neediness to a girl when she says, listen, I'll call you on Tuesday night. And she doesn't call. In other words, she flakes is the terminology. And so when we see her again on Thursday, we have this notion that we need to teach her a lesson. Or we come across as, you know, disappointed that you didn't call me, or sad and or angry. And the truth is, what kind of guy would not be fazed at all and not even notice that she didn't call? And that's a guy who has options and he's not the chaser. And so the proper response to anything like that is to, if she flakes, the proper response is to not notice. Were you supposed to call me on Tuesday night? I forgot all about that. That's a proper response. Anything else telegraphs neediness, because now you are the guy we're waiting on for the phone call. So that's the kind of thing that when we're talking about this business of being phased, which goes along with that long quote you just read.
Right.
Woman says, I have a boyfriend. And the proper response, you know, is along the lines of, well, that's very interesting. Anyway,
right.
As I was saying, you see?
Right.
It has to be like that.
Right.
Anything else, men shrink back when a woman says that. They shrink back and, well, you know, I didn't mean anything by it. Yes, we did. We meant, you know, you're a pretty girl. I like pretty girls. And I wanted to ask you out.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm just thinking about a recent experience I had. I'm thinking about it in terms of that. I'll run past you later in the call, see what you think of it.
I'll tell you a recent experience I had along those lines, too. I was
with some friends in New York City, and we were walking through this.
Hold on, you just got really quiet. Are you saying it? Because
okay.
That's better. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I was in New York City with some friends, and we were walking through this store, and as we were walking by this, one area, I'm not going to give too many details here, this girl said, are you guys interested in blah, 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 blah? And we said, no, thanks, we're just walking on through, we're just wandering through. And she said, as we were walking by, she said, you know, a gentleman never walks away, especially when I'm talking. And I laughed at that, and I turned around and said, what did you just say? She said, I was just joking. And I said, what did you say? She said, a gentleman never walks away, especially when I'm talking, and I was just joking. And I started to laugh, and she was laughing. And I said, you know, tonight's our last night in New York City. We're leaving tomorrow. We're going out tonight to celebrate. Cancel your plans and come with us. And she looked at me kind of sideways and a little smile on her face, and she said, are you asking me out? And I said, of course I'm asking you out. Look at you. Come on with us tonight. Cancel your plans. And so she wrote her number down on the spot, and she came out with us that night. And I ended up asking her, or she told me a month later, that she'd been asked out many times in New York City and never given her number out at work. And I said, why did you give it out to me? And she said, because when I said to you, are you asking me out? You immediately answered, of course I am. Look at you. She said, every other guy I've ever asked that question to, are you asking me out? They say, oh, no, I just thought maybe we'd get a coffee or that we just, you know, hang out as friends. And they back down.
Right.
There's the problem.
Right. So there's sort of honesty in your reaction.
Right. Without presumption and without, okay, it's, you know, the whole concept of if you don't come out with me, then that's your loss.
Right.
It doesn't have that presumptive quality. It's like, I'm celebrating tonight anyway, and you should come because you're going to have fun.
Now there's a fine line between being, I would say this is a fine line between being a sexual guy and a horny guy.
Absolutely.
And, how do you stay on the right side? How do you sort of convey the things you convey without being, you know, sort of a horny guy or a desperate guy or a sex-obsessed guy or someone who has the negative connotations of this sexuality's negative connotations versus its dashing, romantic, sexual, connotations. Where is that line, and how do you stay on the right side of it?
Well, the difference is, having an agenda or not. In other words, if you go up to a girl and your agenda is to get her phone number or to get her into bed that night, then everything that you're saying in that conversation is trying to steer towards that, and she can sense it. If your agenda is, or if you have no agenda and you just like the interaction, you like pretty girls, she's a pretty girl, and you want to say hello to her, and you don't have that needy, horny aspect of trying to get her into bed that night, they will open up. The woman will open up and not be on the defensive. And it doesn't mean you're coming in as just friends. It doesn't mean that at all. A big part of the problem that we have as men is we think that women are putting us into the let's just be friends category. But the truth is we're putting ourselves there by the way we approach and the way we talk to her. So it isn't being overly aggressive or horny and saying, I wanted to go to bed with you. It's basically saying, I love life, and you can be a part of that. That's what you're saying. It's like it's the difference between passion and horniness is what it is.
Great, and I love you. That was a great sort of reframe, and I'd love to and true. But if you can elaborate a little bit on the idea when you say that women don't put us into the let's just be friends category, we put ourselves in there.
Well, we do, because no woman that I ever meet that no woman would ever mistake me for being a guy that she can just befriend. Doesn't mean I'm going to have sex with every girl I meet, but it does mean that my body language and what I say and my voice, et cetera, will telegraph to her, like within 30 seconds, that I'm not a normal guy in that way. We do it ourselves. We come up and we act like friends. And so, she's thinking, this guy's a nice guy. He might be fun to hang out with. Maybe I'll go to parties with him or call him up, or that sort of thing. But we get in that friend zone because of the way we approach and the way we initially set ourselves up. A question I get from guys all the time is, listen, I've been dating this girl 3 or 4 times, and last time I was at her house, or she was at my house, I kind of sat on the couch beside her, and I didn't know how to escalate. I didn't know how to, move into, should I have kissed her? And, how do I kiss her? And the thing is, they never made any kind of overtures to her at all in the first 3 dates, except for just hanging out like as a buddy. And now they want to go move from that frame to the frame of, we're watching a movie now, I want to make out with you.
Right.
It's like, it's too illogical of a leap, and you've been just too friendly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. So you feel like a guy sort of frames the interaction from the beginning by always being a little bit of a dangerous threat to her, sense of sort of innocence? Or how does a guy frame this exactly all the way through it?
It's kind of like it's not so much a dangerous threat. It's just that
by dangerous, I mean a dangerous liaison.
Yeah.
Not in a other way. Just to clarify.
Yeah. If you think of like a, it's kind of like James Bond in Moneypenny. When he kind of looks at her sideways, he knows she's not going to get together with him.
Right.
But he's always got that kind of like that tone and that kind of look and that kind of feel about him with this girl that, the undertone is that you and I should get together. I know you can't because you're married or whatever. But it's that undertone it's really difficult to describe, to be honest, Neil, because it has to be seen. And it's a way of presenting yourself that isn't just, I'm looking for directions and we'd like to go for coffee. And then you go for coffee and you sit there and you're talking about your job and all this other kind of stuff. It's a difficult thing because we put ourselves in that zone. And it's a fine line, like you said.
Right.
We trap ourselves.
Right. And you were we were discussing, well, maybe let's go sequentially. So if I'm looking over guys' biggest problems, you know, one is obviously the approach, the fear of the approach or what to say on the approach or the fear of rejection.
Mm.
And that's something you sort of discuss a lot with your students.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, at any given time, a guy's in one of three zones. He's either single and therefore approaching, or he is dating and therefore not, or trying not to mess that up. He's trying to, you know, elicit some chemistry in the relationship and get her to, you know, to like him in some way. So he's dating. Or he's in a relationship and trying to not to mess that up, trying to keep that maintained. Or he's back to cycle one, which is, you know, approaching and single again. In all, the thing that you know that I've been talking about for the, over the years is the concept that it isn't women that reject us. It's us that reject ourselves before we even go talk to her. So we stand there with our beer in front of us as a shield, and we see this girl, and we want to go talk to her. But in our minds, we're thinking, okay, if I go talk to her, she's, look at her, she's got a boyfriend for sure, and I'm not tall enough for her, and I'm not good-looking enough, and she probably, you know, she's got the nice purse, she's probably used to guys who are rich. And so we run through all these things in our mind, and then we get up our nerve to blast past that self-talk and go talk to her anyway. But she can sense that, like, the thing that just happened there is that she doesn't reject us. We've rejected ourselves beforehand with our self-talk. And so when we go talk to her, we've self-fulfilled that body language that I'm not good enough for her. And so it shows in our voice, in our in the way we move, the way we walk, approach her, et cetera, and she picks up on that. We created that with our own self-rejection, and we did it with our assumptions of her. In other words, we assume that she has a boyfriend. How do we know? We assume that she doesn't like, she wants a tall guy. How do we know this? We invent that. And so since we're assuming things, we can assume something else. We can assume good things. We invented it all anyway.
Right, exactly. And so, and then, so what is one? So, how do you or your students, or how do you recommend approaching?
You know, I recommend approaching without an agenda, because if you do that, if you just approach girls and you're in the moment and just having fun today, and she's part of the fun right now, then I recommend approaching along the lines of just being yourself, being authentic, having the mindset that this girl is into you, and whether it's true or not is immaterial, because you're inventing all the mindsets anyway, so you might as well invent a good one, and just make the assumption that instead that she's not going to be liking you, that she's going to love you. And it changes your body language. That's what will make you stand taller, and that's what will make you stand more confident and your words be more easy.
Great. And any other thoughts on the approach? I was going to move past any other thoughts on the approach, or how to sort of any other thoughts on the approach before I kind of move past that a little bit?
You know, I just, you know, here's one thing. Beautiful girls are always lonely. You talk to girls who are really beautiful, and they'll say, the only time guys ever approach me and talk to me is when they're drunk. And so we need to lose that misconception that we can't go talk to girls because we assume that she's got a, you know, she wants a better guy than us. And be fearless in it. And don't be attached to the notion that she's telling you that, you know, I've got a boyfriend, or I'm not interested in you, thank you very much. We take that seriously. We take that to heart. And you know, and a girl says, we go approach a girl, and she says, you know, I'm not interested. Or however she says it, we walk away feeling our energy drained, our confidence on the floor, and we've just allowed that girl to live rent-free in our head. And we allowed her to create part of our experience in life. And we have to be detached from that and say, you know what, there's no such thing as rejection because we're still us. And it's a hard thing to grasp for guys because we've been pounded since we were very small that, you know, we're not as good as other people and we don't measure up.
Right.
But it is a shift that if a guy can make that shift, then all the external things that we worry about, like women, career, money, all that stuff becomes automatic in life because we have a better self-picture of who we are.
And let me ask it out of curiosity. I'm skipping. Well, you know what? I'll get there. So the other thing is there are three points that I was talking about that are the most difficult for a guy, mm-hmm. and they're sort of the three sticking points for a lot of guys. Is the approach, which we discussed. You know, the second is hitting what I call the hook point, which is okay. You approach, and they could be any. You know, they could. What makes? When do you usually? And you're somebody who's sort of is less a material routine guy, which I think is great. You're less of a material routine guy, and you're really more about the sort of overall sort of attitude, persona,
mm-hmm.
love for women, view of women. So when is it for you that one crosses the point from being a guy who approached her to someone she really not only wants to keep around but fears losing?
Well, you know, it's like it's the whole concept of being buyers and sellers. You know, constantly what we do as men is we're checking in, we're in our heads when we're talking to a girl, and we are checking in, we self-analyze as we're speaking. So in other words, we say something we think is funny, and then we're second-guessing, saying, I hope that was funny enough. We're second-guessing our clothing, our hair, everything. We're thinking the whole time, does she like this kind of stuff about me? Does she like what I'm saying? Am I boring? Am I coming across a certain way? In other words, we're asking, does she like me? Does she like me? Does she like me? And guys who are at ease are constantly doing it the other way. They're looking at this girl and saying, do I like her? Do I like this girl? What's about this girl that interests me? It's the opposite thing. And and you're right. I don't concentrate on a lot of the external things. I concentrate on the mindset. Because in my mind, everything flows automatically when you can have that self-awareness. And the thing that I've been concentrating on in all my teaching and all my studying is not necessarily how to go get phone numbers from a girl. But it's more along the lines, you have that phone number. Now you're on a date. How do you amplify that chemistry? That's the thing that really interests me. So guys will ask me all the time, I just saw you talking to the girl, what'd you say? And I'm like, boy, what did I say? It's because that part of the interaction I don't concentrate on, because I'm more concentrating on the further interactions with that girl, how to make her absolutely, you know what it is? It's the goal of having, instead of getting a bunch of phone numbers, it's having girls think about you the next day. Who was that guy?
Right.
There's something about him. That's what interests me, and that's what I'm teaching. So it's that level of making a girl, you know, think about you. There was something about that guy, and I don't know what it was. That way there's no such thing as them not, you know, as flaking on a phone call because they're fascinated.
No, it's interesting because I remember one day in Montreal, I think that first night we were at some cafe. I think there's a group of four girls next to us. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and I think it was the first time we kind of got to see each other do our things.
Yeah.
And I felt like I learned a lot from watching you. And it's funny to kind of watch each other do things in a very, very different style, yet watch them both be very effective. And, you know, and I was curious sort of like kind of what were your thoughts on seeing, because maybe it was the first time we'd ever seen guys, maybe it wasn't, I don't know, it was the first time you guys seen guys do the you know, the so-called game in that sort of specific sequence of events?
You know what, I'll tell you my response to that, because I remember it very vividly. I remember after seeing you at the table engaging those girls, I remember thinking, this is the most fascinating thing that I've seen in a long time, because you were a self-proclaimed guy who had no skills, and but you had those girls in the palm of your hand, and I was amazed. And I sat back, if you remember, I remember sitting back and watching and thinking, this is fantastic. This is a guy who, by his own admittance, didn't have much traction with women. And these girls, within a few moments, are absolutely fascinated by him. That cemented in my mind way back then that this can be taught.
Right.
It really can.
That's
a great moment. Yeah.
That's interesting. Whoever thought, and at the time, you probably never thought you would have been teaching it.
Well, that's right. I mean, I kind of was, but, you know, I was doing it. I mean, I've always been teaching it.
Right.
But doing it on a more large scale level. Yeah, it's like I realized at that moment that there are things that, you know, we think you can't teach charisma. But I tell you, you exuded charisma that day, and it was fascinating to watch.
It's funny. I remember that. I almost feel like I was a different person then, because I feel like I came, you know, the sort of a journey that came from knowing nothing about women and really being
right.
Just, you know, getting one foot in a month and then the girl not calling me back and just expecting that to happen to the guy who really was out there. And then he just, you know, just kind of bam, 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 using all the pieces of the routines, charming them, sort of like juggling all these balls in the air, to now where I almost like, I almost feel like I'm going out and I'm like purposely holding back. I feel like I've got, you know, all these sort of weapons tucked away that I never even will have to use except in case of emergencies.
Oh, yeah.
And it's more just now sort of just almost free-flowing being myself, because it is sort of that inner game.
Yeah.
That inner game thing. And usually, you know, like having been newly single because I recently broke up with my girlfriend, you know, I'm already in the case of just constant. It's enough to almost like I really can't come from that perspective of I've got too much drama and too much girls in my life right now, so I'm so not needy. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Like I'll tell you the story when you're here, and I was telling the guys this, but we went on Monday, and for the first time, it's never happened to me in my life, two girls had a fist fight about me outside a club. And I wasn't even laughing at the time. It was actually a horrible experience. As kind of cool as that sounds, that was really a horrible experience. There was like blood drawn and police calls.
Oh, wow.
And it was funny because there's the mystery girl fight opener. Do you see those two girls fighting over outside of that little guy? There was this little guy and these two girls were, and I was like, oh my God, this is funny because I'm actually, there are two girls fighting outside a little guy over a club and that little guy is now me. but it's like, and I mean, believe me, that's something I never, ever in a million years ever expected would happen. And this is from not even using routines or material anymore, but sort of just from just having a healthy attitude of you know, I love women, I enjoy their energy, I enjoy them being around, I enjoy everything about women, and having confidence in myself to know that I'm worthy of interacting with them, and that I'm going to be more fun and more interesting than anyone they're going to meet that day or that week or that year.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'll tell you all the rest of it. And you guys in the Style Life Academy will hear about it too. If you check from Style's desk, we have in the mission section. I'm sort of doing it as a serial, and so the first part's up now. The next part goes up on Monday.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy. StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
Back to the sequence. So the third point where guys have a lot of problems, and we talked about this before the call, is transitioning or getting from into either physicality or attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of your specialties.
Yeah, rephrase that. Rephrase that in a question.
Okay, yeah. How does one, if one is, a common problem that many guys have is obviously transitioning, is either building attraction, maybe they'll be talking with a girl, is either building attraction or transitioning from a point where their lips haven't touched to the point where they're actually making out and there's passion involved. So if there are guys on this call who get stuck in the zone and I won't even say friend zone, but the pre-physicality zoning, and just can't cross that leap into where she's attracted to him or passionate about them. How does the guy get over it? Or B, is it the result of a mistake a guy made early on by not framing the interaction in the right way?
B is correct, because you didn't set it up from the beginning that way, and that discontent, that sinking feeling you have when you're sitting with a girl and you don't know how to what your next move should be. You want to maybe kiss her, but you don't know how. You want to put your arm around her, but you know it seems too forward. It's because it is at that point, because you set it up that way to be uncomfortable. That's why the concept of being passionate and when you're talking to a girl, it's not like you're talking to her. It's like you're talking about life to anybody who's in the vicinity, and to be able to portray that idea that one of the things we talk about is touching a girl. Guys who have never touched a girl in 4 dates have even touched her elbow when they're speaking to her. It's very difficult for you now to move in and start making out with her. There's a huge truth to the fact that if you are a guy who's comfortable enough to be able to, without very carefully and with a lot of respect, be touching her when you first meet her and when you talk to her, like touch her arm as you're, look at those guys over there, your hands on her shoulder. Look at those guys over there. What they're doing, sort of thing.
Right.
It's being a guy who's comfortable enough in his body that he's not standing 4 feet away the whole time, and that sort of thing. If you have a first date with a girl, we sit down across the table from her and start to talk to her. I always sit down beside her at the table, on the same side as her. In other words, there's a booth, and instead of sitting across from her, sit beside her. And she'll be surprised, but she'll allow it because you're on a first date, and it's setting up that, it's an example of setting up that, crossing that barrier already without being disrespectful.
And so you sit down next to her, and then I wanted to ask, so when you say, it's funny that you say this because I know what you mean when you say this, when you use this as your example, hey, look at those guys over there.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I'm just going to see if you actually realize, why did you choose to say that? It's great because I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I know. I'll give you an example. I did a seminar in Vegas, and I had a bunch of guys. We were out in the nightclub, or actually kind of a lounge. And I was trying to describe this very concept to them, like how to be a guy who women will allow you to invade their space. Invade's the wrong word, but and I said, well, let me give you an example. And so there's a girl walking by, and I stopped her, and there's 4 guys crowded around me listening to this interaction, and I said, and hard to describe over the phone, but what I kind of said was, my friend over here is from such and such a place, and he's curious about something. I can't remember exactly the words I said at all. But as I said that, I had stopped her, and I had my hand on her, on just below her shoulder, lightly on her arm, and pointing at my friend with my other hand. So I'm standing beside her, not in front of her, standing beside her, like we're both looking the same direction, and I'm like, my friend over here, blah, blah, blah. But that guy over there, and as I did that, my hand moves to a different spot on her, is because I'm moving my body to point, sort of across her, and I just did this demonstration where I talked about 3 or 4 different things, and she was nodding and saying, well, I think this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and I had my hands in that 30-second interaction on both her shoulders, at any given point, her arms, the lower part of her back, like the small of her back, as I was talking to her. It was very natural and very comfortable, and it wasn't strong, and it wasn't rubbing, and it wasn't, it was very light touch, but it was like me, just kind of very carefully and respectfully touching this girl a lot. And then after I was done, I turned to the guys and I said, "You see what I just did?" And she was listening. And I said, "You see what I just did? I had my hand here, 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 and here as I was talking to her." And she laughed and she said, "You know, I never noticed at all. I didn't even notice."
Right.
So
exactly.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And that's why I called attention to it. I just realized something as you were talking, that here's a little bit of the principle that's going on, and it's funny. And I guess to some degree, I guess I'm also sort of a community historian, and I've seen this idea develop, which sort of began when mystery would be sort of this idea. Look at the funny puppets, you know, like, hey, you're going too far. Hey, look at the funny puppets, you know, of sort of drawing the attention away. And that was one thing. And then a guy named Jalax, who's also in the book, talked about cutting in, how he'd find you could stand remarkably if you sort of want to start moving closer to a girl instead of just stepping in closer to her. You actually go to her side. And then you move a little bit closer, and then you can slowly turn toward her. So now, when I saw Love Drop talk about touch and things, that he accentuated this idea even further, which is the idea of, and it's exactly what you're saying, which is if you have sort of moving toward Kino, combined with moving away Kino, and Kino being touch, that it's less threatening than a guy who's touching her and moving toward her and kind of creeping her out.
Right.
You sort of touch her as you turn away, and you're like, hey, look at that. It's somehow, for some reason, the touch isn't sort of aggressive or invasive.
Right.
Signal all those other alarms. And I think that it's so important. There's sort of like for that early touch as you start to get there, and it not only does it make it a safe way to touch, it actually gives you sort of permission to touch because you're not one of those guys.
Exactly.
Right.
And
so,
and the benefit, the side benefit of it, is if you are that guy who's comfortable enough to be able to touch her and like said away, as opposed to turning into her and grabbing her arm and, you know, looking in her eyes deeply, which is threatening when a girl's just met you. But to be able to do that and to be comfortably having, you know, touching her as you're talking and talking away, because as you said that, I realized that's what I've been doing for years.
Right.
Is I don't stand in front of a girl and talk to her. I stand beside her and I talk away. I mean, I'm talking. You know, I'm talking outward, and she is as well. She's looking out that way too, and I'm standing beside her with my arm, with my hand on the small of her back, as
right.
we're talking.
Right, right, yeah, exactly. And then you can get away with that, and early on, putting your hand on the small of her back, putting your arm around her, which might be creepy. Guys trying to get close and getting creepy,
right.
sort of put your arm around her, and sort of be hugging. But if you're sort of doing that as you're pulling away at the same time, or talking about something else somewhere else in the room. You're just sort of like, you know, guiding her and helping her versus kind of waiting for the opportunity to lunge.
And I'll tell you what that does. The side benefit of that, of getting that, you know, being comfortable touching her early on and her being comfortable with the type of touching that you're doing, the side benefit is that you are no longer ever going to be placed in the let's just be friend zone. You've transcended that because you're a guy who's comfortable enough to be able to bridge that gap without standing off and you know, leaning in, talking to her, directly to her.
Interesting. I think that's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And then let's just take a step further. So now you've talked, you sort of conveyed that you are a sexual guy who girls are with, you know, for the purpose of
yeah.
romance and adventure.
Yeah.
You've been touching her in a non-threatening, non-sexual way.
Yeah.
In a safe way.
Yes.
What's next?
Well, you know, I mean, like to further that, if you're keeping your energy light and fun, and you're not serious, you met this girl and you're being all serious, you know, where you're from and, you know, that sort of thing, but you're just having fun with or without her that night, then that touch is natural because you're not aggressively doing it towards her, like you said. But, you know, another thing is I always ask a girl to give me a kiss. As I'm going off to meet my friends or I'm going to the bathroom, or she says, okay, well, it's nice to meet you, I have to go. And I point at my cheek. You know, and it's just a fun thing that I've always done. And it kind of like transcends that gap again.
Right.
Right.
And that's funny. I love that idea. So it's like you're talking for a little while. You're like, I have to go rejoin my friends. Give me a kiss. I have to go to the bathroom. Give me a kiss. I have to go get a drink. Give me a kiss.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then you then point your cheek, she kisses it, you walk off.
Right. Exactly. And it, not very many girls will not do that, will not give you a kiss. If you're doing it in a non-threatening, fun way, and you're just, you know, you're having fun.
Right.
And then it sets it up so that you, she recognizes you as a guy who is comfortable around women. It's a confident thing to do. It telegraphs to her that I'm used to being in the company of women, and it erases a lot of the problems guys have where they're saying, okay, well, I'm sitting on, you know, on the couch with her now. What do I do? Hold her hand? What's the next step?
Exactly. Yeah, I do. It's interesting. I do find that sometimes the safest thing to do or retreat to is just sort of being honest about how you're feeling at a certain time in sort of a fun, engaging way, because she's feeling it too if you're thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What else? Any other important points to mention about guys who have trouble bridging attraction and physicality and making and kissing?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, that's the main thing is to be able to calibrate your body language and your everything you're doing in a way so that you're not coming in as just friends, but then also be very intuitive to her signals, because a lot of guys come in and they're very threatening to a girl, or they're very overt, and she's like backing off thinking, who is this guy? Like, he's too strong. You better come in with a lot of respect, no presumption, and you know, painting a picture of you having fun in life, and she'll buy into it. That's the key.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I have a friend who's a very successful business guy who goes out and loves to go out and flirt with women, but when he flirts, like, he's funny to himself and amusing himself, but not really them, and he thinks he's getting somewhere because they're being polite to him.
Right.
And where there are other guys like yourself who go out and they're funny and they're amusing, but they're really, really abusing the women and exciting them and pressing buttons in them. So in other words, if you go out and you're sort of being charming and funny, what's the line? And again, it might be a hard one to answer, between sort of being funny to yourself and you go home and you feel great because, hey, I talked a lot and there were girls around me and they were laughing, and between that and going home and the girl going home and being, that guy was amazing.
You know, it's the whole thing. I've always talked about self-deprecating humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're making fun of her, you're making fun of yourself, and you're making fun of the whole situation that you're in right now,
mm-hmm.
which is just amusing to you and fun. And most guys, you know, women always say, and the number one thing they like in a guy is a sense of humor. You hear that all the time. But they're not talking about a guy who tells jokes, and they're not talking about a guy who makes fun of other guys standing over there. Look at that guy, you know, the way he's dressed, whatever. They're not talking about that kind of humor. They're talking about a guy who can make fun of himself. And a perfect example is George Clooney. George Clooney is a good-looking guy. He makes fun of himself all the time. And it's attractive to women because it's a very confident thing to do. It's not Woody Allen self-deprecating, where you're like, hey, woe is me. It's the ability to laugh at yourself is one of the top qualities that a woman finds attractive, because it telegraphs massive confidence.
It's funny because we're doing. I'm going to tell you a story that something we're doing in a second. But give me an example of what you mean by the right kind of self-deprecating humor.
Oh boy. Well, you know, like a girl will say to me, she says anything like, if I'm talking to a girl and I'm joking and I'm having fun and I'm you know, winking at her, because I wink all the time, and I'm smiling and winking and carrying on like I do, and she's like, you know, I don't know about you, you seem like you might be trouble, like giving it back to me, like joking mm-hmm. back, right? I'll say something along the lines of, oh yeah, you know, I can never get women, you know how it is. You know, like that sort of thing.
Wait, repeat that. It was too quiet. Say that again.
I'll say stuff like, oh, you know, I know. I can never get women. You know, women like you will never have me. And you're laughing and joking this through.
Right.
You're laughing about that. Or if I have my hand on a woman's back and she and I'm having fun with her, and she kind of gives me a my hands on her back, and she kind of gives me a little bit of a look, like a fun kind of look, like, whoa, you're not afraid, you got your hand on my back, sort of thing. I'll pull my hand out and I'll hold it out for her to slap, because it's hard to describe, but I'll hold it out in front of her and say, okay, slap my hand. I know I wasn't supposed to do that, as a joke, and then
right.
Put my hand right back.
Right. So it's almost so it's less, and I'll tell you why I'm saying this. So it's less actual self-deprecation than comically saying the opposite.
Exactly. Good point.
It's like her saying, "You're troubling." Like, trouble. I'm a nice guy. I live with my mom in the basement. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I got it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Or
yeah.
Say,
so, right.
I'm a terrible boyfriend.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You shouldn't hang around with me, girl, because I'm a terrible boyfriend. But you're kind of cute. That's
right.
The kind of thing I say.
Right. Exactly. And that's one of. I remember there was a guy, and he's done one of these conference calls. A guy named Intense. Who is very, he's very, very methodical. Him and you are almost opposites. He's very methodical in what he does. And I remember he had a post where he broke down humor to four things or five things, and one was comically saying the exact opposite. And I think that's another reason why I said that is because one of my favorite things that we do here in the Style Life Academy is I have these 30-day experiments. And they're as much for the students as for me, because I love learning by modifying my behavior and seeing what happens, which is a lot of what the game was about.
Right.
And so for 3 days, we'll try to do something or not to do something or to make a change. And for the last week, we've been doing one where